Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, alongside Travis Anderson. And as we hit the middle of the week, we have a lot of NBA basketball tonight. Four Game 5s on deck. Game 5s can be so crucial, especially when a series is 2-2. Work on that statistic. What is it, 83% of the time? I think it's 83, 84% of the time the team that wins Game 5 when the series is tied 2-2 goes on to win the series.
Yeah, you got the two series that, like you said, that are tied 2-2 with that. And then you got the Jazz and Thunder, Jazz up 3-1, and you got the Rockets looking to close out. So two crucial game fives and two teams looking to close out.
And we get the Pacers and the Cavaliers tonight. That series is tied 2-2, 5 o'clock start time there. The Wizards and the Raptors, amazingly enough, that series is tied 2-2. I can't believe it. I thought that the Raptors would breeze by Washington. And then we get Utah, OKC. It's 3-1 Utah, and Houston has a chance to close out Minnesota as well. So one of the one seeds could move on. The Western Conference is starting to take shape as far as second round matchups. We know New Orleans is moving on. We know the Warriors are moving on. I like that matchup. I like that matchup a lot. I think the Warriors win, but I think that'll be some entertaining basketball. Be it a four game series or a seven game series, we're going to see some entertaining basketball on that one. But tonight, the Jazz right here on KOAL with an opportunity to advance out of the first round for the second straight year. And before we dive into the logistics of the Jazz Thunder, can we please acknowledge the fact that Quinn Snyder is a freaking amazing coach?
Yeah, he is in the running, back-to-back years for Coach of the Year.
Shouldn't even be in the running. It should be a done deal.
Yeah, it should be. He's probably not going to get it.
That's unfortunate.
It's probably going to go elsewhere, maybe Dwayne Casey of Toronto or wherever it may go, but he should be the Coach of the Year. What he's done with Utah, he's turned them around and has them on the verge of back-to-back seasons where they have advanced past the first round.
Look, nobody has played better basketball than the Utah Jazz since January, and I know Jazz fans really want the Rookie of the Year award. You're not going to get the Rookie of the Year award. It will go to Ben Simmons. Okay, but let's throw that aside, because to me, it would be a bigger robbery if Quinn Snyder did not get Coach of the Year than it will be when Donovan Mitchell does not get Rookie of the Year. Because, I believe that Donovan Mitchell should be Rookie of the Year, but by the NBA's rule, Ben Simmons is considered a rookie, and I have no problem with Simmons getting the award. Quinn Snyder, you cannot convince me that there has been a better coach in the league this year. Brad Stevens, look, it's phenomenal what he did without Gordon Hayward. Yeah, that's great. He had Kyrie Irving for the majority of the season. Okay, and I don't care what happens in the postseason because that's irrelevant to the Coach of the Year award. All right, Casey, look, yeah, Toronto's been great. It was expected for Toronto to be there.
Pringles okay. Over in Houston.
And he's got Chris Paul and James Harden.
You know, it's going to come down to probably Mike D'Antoni or Brad Stevens, I'm afraid.
I think it comes down. I don't think D'Antoni. D'Antoni's going to. Really? You think D'Antoni will be in the running for
Coach
of the Year?
Got the Rockets' best record in the West? Nah. I think so. I think he's going to be one of the finalists.
Let me tell you why Houston has the best record in the West, and we're getting way off base here for the intro to the show, but that's okay. I'm fine with it. Let me tell you why Houston had the best record in the NBA. Golden State didn't care. They played possum. It's a marathon, not a sprint. They don't care about home court advantage. Mike D'Antoni, he's a regular season coach, always has been, always will be, does not translate to success in the postseason, and James Harden had a terrific season built around the fact that Chris Paul is there to facilitate. That's why the Rockets had the best record in the Western Conference. To me, it had very little to do with D'Antoni. Well, I was more impressed with what D'Antoni did last year than I was this year.
But you know how these awards go.
Well, I know how they go, but I'm just saying, for Jazz fans, don't be upset if Donovan Mitchell doesn't get the Rookie of the Year.
Because he's not
going to
win it.
He's not going to win it. And Ben Simmons, look, that's very, it's plausible. I don't have a problem with it. Quinn Snyder doesn't get Coach of the Year. I call foul.
Yeah, it's not right. I'm with you. I think he should be coach of the year. I just don't think he's going to get it.
This team was 9 games under 500 in January, and they are 1 game away from topping the Thunder and sending them packing with Carmelo Anthony, Paul George, and Russell Westbrook. And I know the postseason does not play into it, but the Jazz had a chance to get to the 3 seed. That's my rant to start off the show. Quinn Snyder of the Utah Jazz should be coach of the year, and it shouldn't even be close. Four game fives tonight in the NBA, all of them extremely big. I don't know that Utah gets a win tonight, but I think the Jazz end up winning the series.
Yeah, they'll close them out in 6. I don't think they win tonight. I think it's a close game. One possession game, probably, you know, late in the fourth quarter, Oklahoma finds a way to win. So I'll take the Thunder tonight, but Jazz close out game 6.
I'm with you. I'm going to take Houston to close it out tonight. I'll take the Jazz to close it out in game 6.
Got Rockets, Jazz, yeah. I'll take Raptors at home.
Give me the Raptors at home. Give me the Cavaliers at home. I think that Cavs series goes 7, but I'm taking the Cavs tonight
as
well.
I'll take the Cavs.
We'll talk more NBA basketball a little bit later on in the show. How about some NFL football chit-chat? On the eve of the NFL draft, Dez Bryant still finding ways to steal the spotlight. He turned down a long-term offer from the Baltimore Ravens, and that was kind of the long-rumored destination for Dez Bryant. Doesn't want a multi-year deal. He wants a lucrative 1-year deal, a chance to prove himself, which then he believes will land him a bigger deal in the future. This news was first reported by the Doomsday Podcast. The Ravens have had interest in Bryant for a very long time, going back to 2010 in the draft. It looked like they were going to have a chance at getting him 25th, but the Cowboys traded up 3 spots, and then they selected Dez. So the Ravens have had their eyes on Dez Bryant for a while. He's not signing a multi-year deal. He wants a 1-year deal.
1-year deal. He wants to prove himself, like you said. So if it's not the Ravens, I don't know where this guy's going to play.
He's going to end up in the NFC East, Philly, or the Giants. Although he wants a 1-year deal. I'll throw this out there. He wants a 1-year deal. That's typically where a Super Bowl contender can land him on the cheap.
So the Patriots or what, the Rams?
Don't call the Rams. I don't know. The Rams can't possibly add Dez. Philadelphia makes sense.
Go play in San Francisco and help out Jimmy
San Francisco.
Garoppolo.
Hey, I like that. San Francisco would be a great spot for him. He's not looking for a long-term deal. Green Bay should have been knocking on the door, I think, for Dez already.
Yeah, I think
yesterday.
Yeah, just look at the top like 7 teams in the league, and that's probably one of those 7 he should go to.
Let's take a look at the scoreboard in Major League Baseball, because we've had day baseball already. I like it when we have day baseball because it gives us something to watch and kind of follow throughout the day. Right now, the Rockies and the Padres, this one is wrapping up. The Rockies have had complete control of this game throughout. We go to the 7th inning. Washington all over the Giants right now, 10-1. The Tigers and the Pirates, this one has been a battle. Jameson Taillon, who was lights out for the Pirates early on, hasn't been good the last 2 outings, and the Tigers are looking to top Pittsburgh. 14 runs scored through the first 4 innings of this game today, and the Tigers are up right now by 2. 14 runs scored in 4 innings.
It's a lot of runs. It's offense. People like offense in baseball.
I prefer the 4-3 game.
I do too.
That's what we got.
I don't like those high-scoring games.
Well, we got a 4-3 game earlier today. King Felix Hernandez improves to 3-2 on the mound for the Mariners as they top the White Sox 4-3. The World Series champion Astros defeat the Angels 5-2. Justin Verlander now 4-0 on the mound with a 1.3 ERA. Remember when Yu Darvish was the prized possession at the trade deadline last year and the Astros sneakily grab Justin Verlander? That looks better and better by the day, doesn't it?
Yeah, they swooped in at the last second, you know, with minutes to spare, got Verlander, rode him all the way to that World Series MVP. Got the World Series, yeah, and Yu Darvish struggling with the Cubs, too.
We have plenty more baseball tonight, 4:40 start time. The Braves will take on the Reds. Hey, the Reds are up to 5 wins. I just want to point that out for you.
Yeah, we're on our way to the playoffs.
We get the Cubs and the Indians at 5 p.m. John Lester will take the mound for Chicago. He's 2-0 with a 3.1 ERA. The Rays will travel to meet the Orioles. The Phillies play host to the Diamondbacks. Zach Greinke against Jake Arrieta. I like that pitching matchup. It's got some name power behind it.
Name power, yeah. Arrieta looks still, you know, starting off slow with the Phillies. Because Philadelphia was a team that people were high on.
14-8 to start the year. 9-2 at home.
Good home record. 14-8 is not bad early on.
Jake Arrieta has been pretty good on the mound since that first start. Boston will travel to meet the Blue Jays. The Pirates and the Tigers will partake in a doubleheader game a little bit later on in the afternoon. 5:15, that game is scheduled to start. The A's are at the Rangers. The Cardinals take on the Mets. Michael Wacha will take the mound. Steven Matz on the bump for the Mets. At 6:15 tonight, the Brewers will go toe-to-toe with the Royals. And the Dodgers and the Marlins will play once again. Clayton Kershaw, who's just 1-3 with a 2.4 ERA, will take the hill for the Dodgers. Trevor Richards is on the mound for the Marlins. He is winless. The Marlins topped the Dodgers 3-2 last night.
No offense for the Dodgers when Kershaw pitches.
None.
Again, last night,
they lost a 1-0 game to the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
And then last night, the Dodgers had no run support again. They lost 3-2.
Yeah, for Kershaw. It's been the case the last few years. Not a whole lot of offense when he's been on the mound.
He's kind of got to do it all. We'll see if he can get it moving tonight. It's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. We're going to break for just a moment. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Coach Jeff Cincinnatus of the Carbon Dino baseball team. Carbon had a chance to win the Region 14 championship last night. Came up short against UAB. They'll have a second chance to clinch on Friday. Plus, we'll give you the local sports rundown. And we're going to be joined by Mickey Stubbings later on in the show. Well, Mick Stubbings is a vet at the Desert Thunder Raceway. I always look forward to getting Mick on the show to talk some auto racing. That's coming up on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports when we return here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscaretti. We'll look at local sports. The Carbon Dino boys baseball team suffered their first loss of the Region 14 season yesterday at home, falling to JUAB 8-4. The Dinos had an opportunity to clinch the Region 14 championship with a win and actually held a 4-1 lead going into the fifth inning, but JUAB scored 7 runs in the final 3 frames to grab the 8-4 victory. Zach Bradley earned a no decision on the mound after pitching 4 1/3 innings, giving up 5 hits and allowing 1 earned run. Triton Abeda was charged with the loss. He pitched 1 1/3, giving up 3 hits and allowing 4 runs, while Braxton Bennett also worked a relief effort. Carbon will have one more opportunity to clinch their first region championship since 2009 when they return to the field on Friday to meet JUAB. A win, and it's clear cut and dry. The Dinos are league champions. A loss means Carbon will enter the state tournament the number 2 seed. Now we stick with high school baseball, but we move over to Emory High, and yesterday the Spartans were dealt a 15-2 loss by the Richfield Wildcats. This game took place in Castle Dale. Cade Brazier pitched 6 innings. He allowed 9 earned runs and 12 hits while striking out 4. Offensively, the Spartans were held to just 7 hits throughout the contest. In this game, it was Easton Gordon who logged 1 RBI at the plate while Jace Collard added 1 of his own. Emory is now currently sitting 4-7. They have one more league game on the year. That'll take place next week. The final home contest will go down on Friday as Emory will welcome in North Sevier in a non-region tilt. Emory will then wrap up the season next week against Richfield. As it sits right now, the Spartans are in fourth place in Region 15 at 4-7, tied with North San Pete. Richfield is now taking the top spot in Region 15 at 7-2. The Wildcats have an opportunity to win the Region 15 crown if they can win out. The Emory High School boys soccer team had an opportunity to clinch the Region 15 crown yesterday on the road as they took on the Manti Templars, but ultimately fell short in a 3-1 setback. The game was tied 1-1 at the end of the first half, but Manti found the back of the net twice in the second half to pick up the 2-goal victory. Tanyan Allred scored the lone goal for Emory in the setback. The Spartans are still in fine shape. They are now 6-2-1 on the season, which puts them in second place in Region 15 as they are 1 point behind Manti. Now, the Spartans still have a shot to claim at least a share of the region championship. Emory will wrap up the regular season on Thursday night tomorrow with a night game at 7 p.m. against Richfield. And now they'll be scoreboard watching the Manti Templars. Manti has just 1 game remaining on the season. That'll be on the road against North San Pete. If North San Pete can pull the upset and Emory gets a win, we'd have a split for the region crown. The Carbon Dino boys soccer team continue to make their case for a region championship as they picked up a 5-1 victory over the Delta Rabbits on the road last night. Carbon was dominant from the very beginning. They led 3-1 at the end of the first half and added 2 more goals in the second to pick up the 4-goal win. Giovanni Pavoni once again laced the hat trick for the Dinos. Luke Hansen scored 1 goal and Noah Bradford added 1 more. The only thing that may prevent Carbon from actually winning the Region 14 crown are 2 ties. As it sits right now, they are 7-2-2, while Delta is 9-2-0. Carbon will wrap up the regular season with 1 more contest that'll take place Thursday at home against JUAB. We move over to softball, and the Carbon Lady Dinos blasted through Providence Hall last night, 28-2 on the road to improve to 6-1 in region play. And for Carbon, it's actually their 8th consecutive victory. The Lady Dinos were dominant. They wasted no time at all. They scored 9 runs in the first inning, 11 in the second, and 8 in the third to pick up the short win. As a team, they knocked 30 hits. Now, Carbon again has a chance for a region championship. They have three league games remaining on the slate. They'll take on Union at home. That'll be tomorrow. And then they'll travel on the road to meet Delta next Tuesday before wrapping up the regular season against JUAB on Thursday. And also yesterday, the Emory Lady Spartans took the softball field, this time falling to the Grand Red Devils by a final score of 6-0. That marks their eighth consecutive setback. Emory is now 2-7 in the region portion of the schedule. They'll take on the Richfield Wildcats at home on Friday. Start time is set for 3:30 p.m. And we end by moving over to the national sports scene, where tonight the Utah Jazz will have an opportunity to close out their Western Conference series with the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Jazz will travel to Chesapeake Arena for a 7:30 start time. David Locke and Ron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call beginning at 7:20. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss the play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
We're going to talk some baseball on this edition of the Coach's Corner. Yesterday, the Carbon Dinos had an opportunity to claim a Region 14 championship, led 4-1. As we went off the air, but unfortunately could not hold that lead. And now Carbon will need a win on Friday as they travel to Nephi to meet JUAB. Otherwise, the Dinos will be the number two seed. Can't drop any lower than number two, which means they will host a set of home playoff games once we get into the month of May. Joining us right now to talk a bit about yesterday's performance, we have Coach Jeff Cincinnatus in the studio right now. Coach, pleasure as always. Thank you.
Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate you getting me in.
Unfortunately, we're not talking about a region championship. We'll have an opportunity for that on Friday. But, Coach, an opportunity for your team yesterday to knock off JUAB, get to 9-0 in region play, and seal things up. It worked out for about the first three innings, and then after that, things started changing a little bit. I guess the term, the cliche is quicksand. Kids just started falling deeper and deeper, and before you know it, you get in over your head, and unfortunately, JUAB picks up the win.
Yeah, as you mentioned, we started off well yesterday, jumped out early, I believe three runs in the first inning, tacked on another one in the fourth, had a great opportunity, you know, to add three more runs in that inning, which I still believe, you know, Nate Olson hit a foul ball home run. They called it a foul ball. I believe it was a home run. I thought it stayed fair, which would have put the score at 7-1. Didn't end up that way. JUAB gets out of the inning, you know, still 4-0 at that point in time, or 4-1, excuse me. But from that point on, I just kind of thought we got flat. We kind of quit playing a little bit and allowed JUAB a little momentum. You know, I think they tied it up in the fourth inning and basically outscored us, you know, 7-0 after that point in time and walk away with an 8-4 win. And, you know, we made some errors that really hurt us. I thought the biggest thing yesterday, and, you know, we've talked about our pitching staff all year and how great they've been and just how good they are, and they are really good, but I thought walks yesterday really hurt us. You know, every time you put a walk on base, something bad usually happens defensively, and yesterday was a prime example. We walk a couple guys, either give up a base hit or we had an error, and it just kind of compounded after that. And I just thought the walks really hurt us yesterday. The flow of the game changed. It slowed down. The innings were long, and we just gave JUAB, you know, a lot of hope that they didn't really deserve or earn because of those walks. And not to take anything away from them, they're a good team. That's why they were playing in the situation they were in, you know, right there with us, and now we're both playing for a region title on Friday at their place. Winner takes first in our region, the loser takes second. We'll both host a first round, you know, which is great for both programs. But I really thought the walks yesterday was a big part of the game and kind of what slowed us up and kind of put us to sleep a little bit.
Well, could you mention errors against a good team? And that's exactly what it is. I mean, JUAB only has one loss in region play for a reason. They're a pretty good team, and you can afford a couple of errors when you're playing a squad, maybe like an ALA. No disrespect against them, but No. Let's just be honest. I mean, you can afford an error or two. When you're playing for a region championship, it's different.
Yeah, and I told our guys that. You know, we've been making those errors. It's been a problem of ours all year, which is really surprising me because I feel like we're really solid in our defensive positions, but I bet we're averaging five errors a ball game. And you cannot do that and be successful. And I've been pounding our guys that these errors are going to hurt us against a quality team. You mentioned beating teams. You know, yeah, we had six errors against ALA last week and still won 14-5. And you're just not going to do that getting into the, you know, this part of the season, playing for a region title, moving on into the playoffs, and hopefully playing for a state title. It doesn't matter who you're playing at that level. You know, errors are definitely going to hurt you. And right now they're really hurting us, and we need to clean those up. And we work on it every day. It's just a mental thing. We're just not mentally preparing ourselves before every pitch to make a play. And it's something that I've been focusing on. And I'm still a little bit lost as a coach on how we just get that across to our kids to focus up every play. And it's a frustrating thing, and I'll take that as a coach. That's part of my job, you know, not only the physical part of the game, but the mental part of the game. And it's obviously something that I need to be better at and relay to the kids, and we need to be better, or we're not going to get to where we want to be this year.
You guys have one extra base hit, I believe, throughout the entire game. And you talked about Nate Olson and how that home run that – you believe should have been fair. If it's called fair, it's 7-1. I mean, that's a completely different game, especially off of a home run. It may have been worth three runs, but a home run in a game like that is worth a hell of a lot more than three runs.
Oh, right? Yeah. Momentum-wise, you know, you're at that point in time of the game, we had our foot on, you know, Juab's neck, so to speak, and we just took our foot off their neck is what we did. And you know, Nate had a great at-bat. I mean, he battled, fouled off five or six pitches after they intentionally walked Cody Lowe, who, you know, is arguably one of the state's best hitters in any classification. And, you know, it was a great at-bat by Nate. He ends up flying out, and, you know, no disrespect to him. I'm not saying that it's his fault that we were flat for the rest of the game, but it just seemed like it was a turning point in the game. And, yeah, I mean, that's a big turnaround from being 7-1, you know, to 4-1, but it's just the momentum thing that you would carry with you, and who knows how much more that inning goes after that. But then, you know, we had another rally killer, I think, in the fifth inning. We had guys on first and third with no outs in a tie ball game. We get a strikeout at the plate and an interference call. And so they call the runner out that was going from first to second on a steal. And now instead of having, you know, guys on the corners with only one out with a strikeout, we have a guy at third base with two outs. And, again, we get out of that inning and don't score a run in a 4-4 ball game. And the momentum just kept, you know, shifting to Juab every time we tried to get a little bit of it back. It just kept shifting over to Juab yesterday, and good teams take advantage of that. And Juab, like you mentioned, is a good team. That's why they came into the ballgame, you know, 7-1, and you know, deserved to win yesterday. They made less mistakes than we did yesterday, and deserved to win yesterday. And I'm hoping that we can turn that around Friday at their place.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Jeff Cincinnatus of the Carbon Dino Baseball Squad. Coach, Zach Bradley goes 4 1/3 in this game, gives up 5 hits, 1 earned run. One earned run in a game in which you guys had given up 4 runs when Zach had been relieved of his duties, but right. We're talking about 4 runs compared to only 1 earned. I mean, that right there is such a telling stat based off errors.
Yeah, anybody knows, you know, earned runs. I mean, that's what a team earns. It's plain and simple. An earned run is what a team earned, and at that point in time, they had 4 runs on the board, and so, you know, 3 of those runs are not earned, and baseball is an unforgiving game that, you know, a team can go and beat another team and so to speak, not earn that win. But, you know, those runs that are unearned have been killing us all year. If you look at probably 90% of the runs we've given up this year, I bet have been unearned. And, you know, that goes to our pitching staff to say just how good they are that they're not giving up earned runs. But it also says, you know, a lot of those are walks, and a lot of those are just errors that our fielders are making. And not only our fielders, our pitchers. You know, we had a chance yesterday to get out of an inning without giving up runs after Triton had come in and started pitching. We had a ground ball back to the pitcher. Instead of rolling a double play and getting out of the inning, you know, we get the out at second base, and then we drop a ball and don't get to, you know, connect at first base for a double play. And, of course, the next guy gets a hit and scores runs. So those are opportunities missed by us and taken advantage of by our opponents. And, again, it's just something that you deal with at every level, you know, whether it's, you know, clear down to Little League and clear up to the major league level. I mean, opportunities are big, and the teams that take advantage of them are usually going to be the ones that come out on top, and that was the case yesterday.
This may sound completely goofy, but I remember Coach Mike Krzyzewski of Duke did say he prefers his team sometimes to suffer a loss in the conference tournament going into the NCAA tournament because it's so hard to play that consistently good for such a long period of time. And that sounds odd, but you guys haven't lost in a very long time, especially in a meaningful game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you'll never talk to a coach who wants to lose a game, but also you'll – I don't think you'll ever talk to one that does say, you know, a loss sometimes helps your program. And I believe that, you know, there was a couple times earlier in the year where I thought, you know, if we lose this ball game, we're going to learn a lot more than if we win it. And unfortunately for us, maybe we won those games and didn't learn that lesson a little bit earlier in the season. And maybe, you know, losing yesterday and giving those opportunities away, you know, especially with things that we've talked about. We've talked about the interference call at home plate. You can't get out over the plate as a hitter. We've gotten away with it a couple times, and it wasn't called on us. Well, we found out yesterday a good umpire called it, and it was a game changer for us in that inning. So maybe, you know, like you said, doing that and even losing a game yesterday will make us that much better. Hey, we still have an opportunity to win a region title, and we still have an opportunity for a state title. So that loss yesterday can be a very good loss for us if we take it the right way and we work hard in the next 2 days and the next 2 weeks and see what we can do.
Been a long time since Carbon has won a region championship. Would have been a lot easier, I know, to win it at home, but now you got to go on the road and grab it. At the same time, you can't fall any further than number two. So what do you do in practice over the next 2 days to prepare for that game? Is it business as usual? Do you change things up a little bit? I mean, what's the approach?
No, it's going to be business as usual. Today's just going to try and be, you know, getting back on track, getting our focus back. I mean, you know, guys weren't happy yesterday after a loss, especially our coaching staff and some of the players. I know they were upset, and so were we. And, you know, we've got to just completely, you know, put that in the back seat and move forward. I mean, I don't want us to forget about what happened yesterday. I want us to build on it. So I'm not just going to say, you know, let's forget about it. But we need to not harp on it. We need to not keep, you know, going over the negatives about yesterday, and let's try and find the positives and how we can move forward. And so, you know, today and tomorrow, business as usual, get back in the batting cage and get a lot of cuts. You know, we're going to face what I believe is Juab's best pitcher, to be honest with you. He's a left-hander. I was a little surprised he didn't throw yesterday, and so I'm sure we'll see him at their place. And we've fared pretty well with left-handers this year, so, you know, we'll hopefully see a lot of left-handed pitching from our coach Kyle Abay today at practice, so we can get, you know, those swings down. But, you know, even moving forward, like you said, we're going to host the first round of the state tournament in Helper on May 5th. We'll have four teams here, three and ourselves, and so regardless if it's first or second, you know, we're going to host a first round. And, you know, that's an exciting thing. It's been a long time since, you know, Carbon's hosted a first round. And, you know, we're just looking forward to that opportunity and then moving forward after that first and second round and getting as deep as we can and making a run for a title.
Who do you guys combat the lefty with?
Cody Lowell pitched for us on Friday. I mean, Friday's been his day. And arguably, Cody's probably been our best pitcher all year when you look at stat-wise and what he's done. And, you know, he's had a great couple outings here lately, and I hope that carries over to Friday. Cody works in a rhythm. You know, he works fairly fast, and if he's throwing strikes, he's pretty tough to hit. You know, some of Cody's downfall in the past has been he struggles to find the strike zone, you know, sometimes, and here lately that hasn't been a problem. And so I'm hoping that, you know, we get the Cody Lowe who's prepared to play and win us a region title on Friday, and I know he's been doing it with his bat and lately with his pitching and everything, and hopefully Friday's no different for us.
I think in 9 appearances, he's 5-0 with 4 no decisions.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah. I mean, by far, you know, stat-wise, he has our best record as a pitcher. And honestly, you know, overall, he probably has thrown the best. And not to take anything away from any of our other pitchers, you know, some of them have been battling with certain things. You know, Zach Bradley's been, he's been a great pitcher for us since his sophomore year when he came in and relieved Cole Fawcett in, you know, our epic first-round playoff game with Park City and came in and threw the way he did and got a win for us in that game. And he's been battling some health issues this year, which, you know, has really taken its toll physically on Zach. And I see it. And, you know, and he's trying to work through it and battle the best he can. And, you know, I take my hat off to a kid who is working through some of those things at that age and is still able to go out there and give you his best effort. You know, Triton obviously missed all last year with a knee injury and, you know, and hasn't pitched in over a year. And so he's working himself back into things and whatnot. But, you know, we're going to get Cody Lowe on Friday. We're going to put it on his shoulders. And, you know, we've been riding him all year and really been riding him for the last 2 years, you know, and he's stepped up to that challenge. And I expect nothing less of him, you know, on Friday.
Well, Coach, I appreciate you stopping by. Thank you very much for the time. I'm going to let you get so you can go to practice. But best of luck on Friday, and hopefully we'll catch up again next week.
Thanks, appreciate it.
Again, that's Coach Jeff Cincinnatus of the Carbon Dino Baseball Squad talking about the team situation. Again, if they get a win on Friday, they will be region champions. Otherwise, they will be the number two seed. And Travis, there's a chance they could meet Emory in the first round of the state tournament.
How fun would that be?
It'd be a lot of fun.
It'd be a lot of fun. So hopefully they take care of business and win the region championship. Bounce back. That's what you got to do. You got to bounce back now.
No doubt. We're going to break for just a moment. When we come back, we're going to keep it on the local sports front. Mickey Stubbings is going to join us. We'll talk local auto racing. Mick's been in racing for close to 50 years. And he'll be back in action this Friday and Saturday at the Desert Thunder Raceway. That's coming up next when we return here on Drive Time Sports.
Hey, this is Eric Amarola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports on AM 750.
Let's talk some local auto racing here on Drive Time Sports. Joining us right now over the phone, we have Mickey Stubbings. He's an old vet when it comes to the Desert Thunder Raceway. Almost 50 years this guy's been racing. And, of course, the Desert Thunder Raceway will be opening up their gates once again Friday and Saturday. Second set of races. And on Monday, we'll be at the midpoint. So you should have some terrific weather this weekend to go watch some of the fastest cars on the dirt track here in the western United States. Mickey Stubbings joining us again over the phone right now. Mick, a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to do this. It's always a pleasure.
Well, it's always fun to talk some racing with you. I mean, you're back at it again. I think you and I have had conversations here on the air for about 7-8 years now. I know you're a seasoned vet, and you're getting set to go back out for the second set of races at the Desert Thunder this Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, correct. The first two races we had, the racetrack was really good. There was a lot of people showed up out of state. I can't even tell you how many people. Probably at least 20 different racers from out of the state of Utah showed up.
Well, it was a very cold weekend, though. How does that affect the racing when it's cold, or does it at all?
Not really, other than it's just an aggravation, pretty much. It's kind of hard to keep the race car engine warm. You got to tape up the radiator and block it off a little bit so if you run around 200 degrees, 190, that's part of it. But it also makes the racetrack really fast because it holds the moisture.
Now, Mickey, again, as I mentioned, you've been at this for a very long time. How many years have you been racing now?
That's about 46.
Wow. That's a lot of time in the car. What keeps you coming back for more and more? What keeps you going, Mick?
Oh, man, just the thrill of being out there with competitors, driving off into the turns. This track out here is pretty fast. If it's on a good night, you get 80, maybe 90 mile an hour going off into the turns. Standing on the throttle, man, passing people. It's just, I don't know, something about it. It's hard to really explain other than it's just a blast.
Well, you've been at it for so long, and last year I did catch up with you. You had a very good season last year all the way around, right? I mean, that was a pretty successful campaign for you.
Yeah, it was. You know, anytime you can win a race in this modified class, that's for sure. It's something that it's hard to do, really, because there are so many competitors that are, man, everything's really close. It's just hard to win, to tell you the truth.
The IMCA Modified seemed to always be the main event. When I talk to people that go out and watch the racing, I mean, that's what they really get up for. They love to watch the IMCA Modifieds, and you talk about the competition. There's never really a surprise when Zane DeVilbiss is finishing at least at the top of the standings here, especially in price. He's had such great success at Desert Thunder. This last year, we didn't see Zane as often. This year, he picks up right where we left off from the last time we saw him. He takes home the checkered flag both Friday and Saturday night. That's a special kid. He definitely knows how to win.
Oh, absolutely. He's been IMCA Modified champion for the whole United States, I think twice. He's really a tough competitor, and he knows what he's doing, how to adjust for track conditions, and You know, that's part of it. And he builds his own race cars. You know, he builds quite a few. I don't know how many. I talked to him a while back. I think he was building 7 or 8 new race cars for different people in the Western United States this year.
Wow. Yeah, he definitely knows his stuff, but it's not just Zane DeVilbiss. I know the last time out, Wyatt Howard had a second-place finish, and he also finished 4th, I believe, on the second night as well. Travis Mintz had a top-5 finish. Another guy that people are going to recognize, Scott Gray, finished within the top 5. So as you mentioned, just a lot of talent, a lot of competition in the IMCA Modifieds.
Oh, correct. You know, there was here in Price, it attracts good drivers. From all over the place, you know, like Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, Idaho, Nevada. It attracts drivers here because the racetrack is wide enough that you can pass on, and it's just good racetrack. That's all.
Again, we're being joined right now by Mickey Stubbings as we preview what is up and coming this Friday and Saturday at the Desert Thunder Raceway. Your second chance to get out and watch what's going to be a 4-set race season. Mick, with that being said, a couple of days away from Friday, what's preparation like for you leading up to the race? What are some of the things that you have to take care of?
Well, you got to, they call it nut and bolt, your car. You got to go back, go over and check everything on the race car, make sure there's nothing coming loose. And you have to check all your ride heights, and you got to check your toe in on your car. You have to sometimes you have to change put a different gear in, and you got to grease the places that need to be greased. You got to keep your car free, and basically it's getting it back to where it was, making sure that everything is proper like it's supposed to be, weight percentages, things like that that you have to recheck every week.
As far as the preparation goes for someone who's been around for as long as you have, how has that evolved over the last 40 years? What are some of the massive changes that you've encountered on that aspect of it? Not just racing on Fridays and Saturday nights, but the preparation going into it.
Well, it's a lot of times nowadays it's about shocks. They got gas up shocks in them on your race car, and you know, different settings on the shock, whether it holds the car down or whether it's what rebound and stuff like that goes into the car, and chassis designers have reconfigured the front end so that they steer properly, so that when you go off into the turn, the car will turn pretty much by itself. Those are the kind of things you got to work on to make sure that your car turns properly. If it doesn't turn properly, then you're not going to go fast and you're not going to win. And back in the old days, everything was just maybe with tire pressure or wedge in the car or stagger, different tire sizes. Nowadays, it's all bar. They're 4-link. Suspensions, and there you can adjust traction, you can adjust rear steer in the car to make them turn better and to keep the car free. There's a ton of things you have to do nowadays.
Again, Mick Stubbings joining us right now as we prepare for what is up and coming this weekend at the Desert Thunder Raceway. And we could talk about the logistics of the race, Mick. For someone who's never been out there, at the Desert Thunder Raceway, you have an opportunity to see 4-wide racing on a dirt track. That's not something you get to see every day.
No. You know, there's it's really unique in Price because you get a chance to do that. There's a few racetracks you don't know. You know, like Rock Springs, you can run 2 or 3 wide. Vernal, you know, you can run 2 and 3 wide there at times. Delta's a little bit tighter racetrack, but Price is a unique one in the state of Utah to be able to do that. And excuse me. And, you know, we have some local drivers that like Parrish and Housekeeper and the Thomas family. They support every time we race here. Street stocks is and hobby stocks are on the way back. There's more and more people building them, and I would really like to see some more of the guys in the Price area and Emory County to bring out their race cars. You know, that are covered up or sitting in the back. I know there's a lot of them out there, but they need to get them out there now.
Well, Mick, I definitely look forward to seeing you out there this weekend. And again, hopefully the participation is as great as it was the first go around. And you guys had a lot of competitive racing. And then on top of that, you had a great fan turnout as well. So it's a pleasure to get you on and talk about your racing. I can't believe you've been doing it 46 years. That's remarkable. Cheers to 46 more years. Best of luck this weekend. And hopefully we talk again soon.
Yeah. And, you know, without our sponsors, a lot of this can't be done, and the track sponsors are Carbon County Office of Touring and Komatsu, and GCR Tire and Star Loans, O'Reilly's and Price Oil, and everybody needs to thank those people for helping Harvey at Desert Thunder put on these races.
Thank you very much, Mick. Best of luck this weekend.
Yeah, and thank you, and let's go put the hammer down and have some fun.
Let's go racing. How's that sound?
There we go.
Always fun to get Mick Stubbings on the show. Travis, he's been doing this 46 years, this guy has been racing.
I couldn't imagine doing something for 40-plus years, and this guy has been in that racing for 40-plus
competitively.
Years. Yeah, competitively, so it's a nod to him, so... Keep going.
He's been doing it 46 years. He competes for track championships.
It's incredible.
I love it. It is.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Fun interview. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports when we return.
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Real name, no gimmicks.
On 750 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the grave.
We're back to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. It's one of those days where an hour just isn't enough. Tomorrow, we're going to talk a lot of NFL football. We actually have Steve Bordstein of Fox Sports and Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports set to join us as we prepare for the NFL draft because it's here. I feel like in the past, we had weeks and weeks and weeks of NFL draft talk, and this year we were just so busy with other topics that it kind of got pushed aside. The Cleveland Browns, number one overall pick, they're on the clock right now. Before we hop on air tomorrow afternoon, does the news break that they're drafting Baker Mayfield, yay or nay?
I will say nay. They go Josh Allen.
Josh Allen's your number one pick.
That's the number one pick.
I'm going to say Sam Darnold, and I'm happy with Sam Darnold being the number one pick, and I'll tell you why. I don't want to sit here and gloat about a USC quarterback, but the fact that that kid threw on Pro Day in the rain tells me something, and that's why I want him to go number one. That probably sounds stupid. That's a stupid reason for someone to want to go number one, right? But in this day and age, with all the pro days and with all the scouting combines and everything that we have, kids refusing to throw, it was raining. Sam Darnold had an opportunity to say, you know what, it's wet. I don't want to risk my draft stock. He went out, he threw, he was successful. He started to rise on draft boards. That probably sounds really stupid, but that's why I want him to go number one.
No, I hope Cleveland takes Baker Mayfield. And then I hope New York at two takes Saquon Barkley because there's a team at three. Sitting pretty, they could draft Sam Darnold.
Yeah, but you're a Jet fan, so you're being hopeful. Being realistic.
I don't think Cleveland takes Sam Darnold. I don't.
Okay. Who goes four?
Four is interesting. I think Cleveland has options. I would take Quentin Nelson myself, but...
I'm going with Bradley Chubb.
But, yeah.
I know that I've sat here and I've praised Quentin Nelson for like the last 3 months on the show because I believe that kid is going to go into the Hall of Fame. But the Browns have an opportunity to build something very, very special on the outside rush defensively. You used the number one pick on Myles Garrett last year. Don't let that go in vain, okay? Make sure that you add and you help. You help Myles Garrett. Let's help him become what he can become in the NFL based on help on the opposite side, and I think you get that in Bradley Chubb.
Yeah, if Cleveland at one, if they're not thinking quarterback, then they absolutely should go Saquon Barkley and Bradley Chubb. I mean, You and I have been saying that
Chubb's
got to
be your fourth pick. Yeah, if Chubb is on the board, he's got to go to Cleveland.
You can't pass up Bradley Chubb. You just can't.
So we will talk more NFL draft on the show tomorrow. Again, I want to thank Coach Jeff Cincinnatus. He always makes time for the show, and also Mickey Stubbings. Fun to talk some local auto racing. Make sure you get out and watch Mick this weekend, Friday and Saturday. The Desert Thunder Raceway is going to be back open. And of course, tomorrow we will talk a lot of NBA basketball. I am excited for our guest on Friday, Ian Thompson, who has wrote the new book, The Soul of Basketball. You may recognize that name, Ian Thompson. He writes for Sports Illustrated and also NBA.com. He is going to join us on Friday. We'll have an NBA conversation. Do not forget the Utah Jazz and the Oklahoma City Thunder tonight at 7:20. Tip-off is set for 7:30, but David Locke and Ron Boone will run down the pregame for you. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. We'll catch you tomorrow. Be safe. We are out.